Want to know which companies are about to list on the London Stock Exchange? To see an up-to-date list of all the new and upcoming London IPOs, please visit voxmarkets.co.uk/IPO-watch.
Welcome. You're listening to the Industry Experts podcast by Vox Markets. I'm Anita, and joining me today is Duncan Cheadle, the founder and chairman of the Supper Club, and Emma Jane Pack, who is the managing director. The Supper Club is an exclusive membership club which enables hundreds of founders and CEOs to network with each other, and their mission is to inspire entrepreneurial mindsets in leaders across all industries. So welcome, Duncan and Emma Jane. Thank you for joining us. Just to familiarize our audience a bit with your company, Duncan, do you mind telling us a bit about how you started and what led to your founding the Supper Club? Was it more personal experience, or did you identify a specific gap in the market?
I guess it was a bit of both. I mean, it seems like a long time ago now, 15 years ago or just over. Back at that time, it was sort of height of the dot-com boom, first time round, or just after, actually, just post-crash. There were networking things for founders back then, but they were frustrating in that they were largely led by a speaker and a whole load of people in a room mixed in with professional advisors. And you'd find yourself invariably at the end turning around and hoping to have a conversation with a fellow entrepreneur, but ending up usually talking to an accountant or a lawyer or somebody else that was trying to sell you their services. So that's when I got or saw an opportunity to bring a peer group together that excluded, for the most part, professional advisors and honed in on that peer group. So you knew that whoever you're going to talk to, they'd be kindred spirits.
So it was really about a sense of community more than
exactly
just networking.
Exactly that, yeah.
And I guess this is now for either of you. From what we've seen in our research, the Supper Club is all about support and peer-to-peer learning. What do you think separates or really differentiates the Supper Club from maybe other gatherings of the sort? I know you sort of touched on this, but what is the real differentiator there?
I guess the key thing is people talk about startups and scale-ups, and we're very much in the scale-up space. So what that means in practice, as well as only bringing in advisors in the right context, we very much focus in on the founders and CEOs of businesses that have got beyond the micro stage, the very early stages, and are now in that kind of fast growth pace where they've got maybe a few million turnover and they're hiring 10, 20 staff upwards. So that's our key spot. We've got businesses all the way up to the kind of the billion dollar or billion pound mark. But we focus on scale-ups, not startups.
And what was the specific thought there in going for bigger companies? Did you see that there was a more like value added, or what was the thought?
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, firstly, I think there's a lot of networks and groups out there supporting startups, far less in the scale up space. And if you throw too many people together at two different stages, the value may be very very high for startup founders, but it ends up just being more of a mentoring process rather than a peer group learning experience. So we thought there was a real gap in the market for bringing those together. They've already enjoyed some success, and maybe they want to help support the startup community on occasion, but they really want to meet people at the same level as them and learn from them rather than just turning to advisors. So people have got no axe to grind, but just to help each other.
Right. And Emma Jane, as managing director, you must be dealing with all kinds of entrepreneurs on a day-to-day basis. What does this mean for you exactly?
The full range, really. We quite often get ad hoc requests from members who might call us or email in and say, I need help with a certain thing. Now, that might be something quite tactical, quite quick and easy to help with, or it might be a more strategic decision. So looking to raise finance or go into a new international market, or even planning to exit or step back from the business. And what we'll then be able to do is introduce them to other members who might have gone through that process already and share their experience around it. Also to advisors. So as Duncan mentioned, they're not necessarily allowed to be members of the club, but we get introduced to advisors and that network grows. So if, let's say, launching in the US, you might go, right, speak to this member who's already over there, but here's also a lawyer that can help you out with the legal side. And then separate to that, we run 250 events a year. So month by month, we have a lot of roundtables, dinners, breakfast, lunches, speaker events. We do a number of forums. So on a day-to-day basis, or even over a week, I might be out three or four times at different events. And therefore, I'm meeting members face-to-face, which is why I love my job, which is you might be having a tough day, but then you go. And what gives us our energy is sitting around and, from a personal point of view, learning a lot from amazing people who've done a lot. So your own learning increases, and then you're inspired by entrepreneurs, because they're always quite positive and like, let's get on and do something. And then seeing entrepreneurs help each other out, the impact that it can have when you hear someone go, oh, I've been through that as well, or helping them when business happens, or they get over a problem quicker, or they're able to take an advantage of an opportunity quicker. So that's why we love our job.
And it sounds like, so you've said founded 15 years ago, clearly in multiple countries and across sectors. And I guess this plays to both of your expertise. What is the biggest metric of growth that you've seen take place? Is it a breadth of clients? You know, maybe it expands through different sectors, or how do you see the Supper Club really expanding?
Do you mean that from a member point of view, how they define their growth, or for ourselves?
No, on your end of things.
Yeah, so I think from our side, I think what's really exciting is, even compared to when I joined 6 years ago, there's such a wider breadth of industries represented at all different levels of scale. There's a lot more members who are manufacturing, who are designing products. We've got a lot of very high growth digital businesses, as you'd expect, because they're quite representative of the market. Got a lot more female entrepreneurs coming through, which is great. And really interesting, especially over the last couple of years, is the number of I'm going to use the M word, millennial leaders coming through, very high achievers at 23 or 24, who are running businesses with 150 plus people and going into national markets. It's quite depressing, but equally as exciting. So the average age of our membership is actually coming down a little bit, because they're reaching that scale much quicker. And when you see some Gen X, you know, having to incentivize their own teams who are millennials, then learning from millennial leaders and vice versa, because you've got wisdom and experience in the market coming in with completely fresh ways of doing things, it can be really powerful in dinners. So that's something that I found particularly exciting.
And the one thing I'd add is just seeing over, I mean, just the last few years, it's amazing how quickly you get used to fintech and edtech and all of this thing. But I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but I'm certainly 5-6 years ago, tech was just one category. So retail, et cetera, would all be broken out and people would have a focus. And then we had this sort of tech, which covered software and everything else tech related. And of course, I think probably, I'd hazard a guess, 5%, maybe 10% max of our members now are not either tech or tech-enabled businesses. So I think that's been a really big change over the last 5-10 years, huge change. And the other observation is just the number that are funded. So I think probably going back 10 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, we would have had, and again, this is just shooting from the hip, but 20, 30% of the businesses would have been equity funded. And I guess now, particularly with the younger businesses, people are raising money because the market moves so quickly. So whatever sector they're in, I think there's a pressure to raise debt and equity finance to scale up much faster, because if you don't, you're kind of left dead. So that's exciting, but it also just means that if you don't, you can get left behind. And I think a lot of people used to grow a business a bit more slowly and steadily and work out. And time is less available these days.
Right. And so in terms of actually becoming a member, what is that process like?
Very, very tough. it's a full range of different ways that we find new members. As you can imagine, most of our new members come in by referral. So our current members introducing or referring people they think would be a good fit for the club. We get applications to join the club, and more so as we've become more well known amongst the entrepreneur community. And we also then reach out to members that we might see in the press or have gone through rapid growth, and all the usual spots that you might see at awards, etc., that we think could be a good fit, or they've got a really interesting story that they might be able to share with members, and we'll go and invite them to apply. So we always have an initial call with someone just to make sure that there's a cultural fit, and explain some top line how the club works and explore that further. And if we both think there's a fit both ways, then we'll organise a meeting, a more in-depth meeting, where we can really understand the backstory of that entrepreneur, what their goals are, current challenges, and then we can start showing them how they might be able to use the club. Because yes, we talk a lot about the events, but every member gets a dedicated member manager, and there's so much more that we do outside of events through content, thought leadership. We have PR opportunities that we can then help sort of tailor how the member might then use the club.
So it sounds like the member is receiving sort of two types of services, both an organic one from having the community of peers and learning and sort of supporting one another, but also a more intentional direct effort from you that's more studied. If that's correct, what would you say the breakdown is maybe between those two? Do you see one sort of being the focal point over the other, or more of a balance?
I think members tend to go on a journey with their own, obviously, entrepreneurial journey, but also with us. So, and again, it depends on how they want to use the club, how they like to interact with fellow members. So there's a lot that goes organically that we only hear about afterwards and in hindsight. Oh yeah, I met a member and we're doing business now. Or, oh, so-and-so helped me overcome this challenge. Or I met them at a dinner and 6 months later, I actually called them up and now we're talking about some other opportunity, which is great to hear. So that organically happens. However, on the flip side, we have a member managers, as I said, and we do proactive member management where we'll reach out for opportunities, or we do curate the events quite heavily. So invite them to events we think they might be relevant for. Now, some members are quite proactive themselves. They'll go on and put themselves onto events, or they quite like working that way. And others are a bit more, you tell me when something interesting comes up that might be relevant for us. And so we just tailor it.
I think there's also a little more structure perhaps for earlier stage businesses. So those turning over just a few million versus those that may be up to several hundred staff and into the tens or hundreds of millions of turnover. They've clearly got different experience sets. And so, you know, over a 15-year history, we've had the good fortune to sort of see the patterns and the commonalities. So we tend to be a little more structured in the way we try and provide support for those that are slightly earlier in that journey, because we just sort of, we know from experience what works and doesn't work. So we'll give a bit more of a steer to earlier stage businesses than maybe that we will to those that have been around the block and scaled up a bit further, where they'll dip in a little more flexible.
And what are some of the most common challenges you see facing your members? Obviously, as there are different parts of the process, they won't be the same, but are there a few sort of textbook challenges that members of your team have really learned to try to deal with effectively?
Yeah. What we find is 95% of businesses face the same challenges. There might be sort of industry specific ones, and they come down to, you know, not rocket science, people, time, money, and a lot around talent and culture, incentivizing teams and building senior management teams, and then maybe even bringing non-execs through. There's a raising finance, and I think as Duncan alluded to, there's a lot more openness to the different options of finance available, and there's so many more innovative products out there. And then also sort of looking at international markets, also internal markets. It might be governments, it might be selling to corporates. It then also like looking at exit strategies. A lot of members might not want to sell their business, but they want to step back. So all those same challenges that businesses face. And as Duncan mentioned, earlier stage, there will be more specific challenges that we see across businesses that tend to be around people, sales, marketing. When you get into private equity backed, it might be managing investors, for instance. So, and what we're also seeing a trend coming through is actually a lot of members who either have exited or are looking at life beyond their business. So maybe having a portfolio career or looking at how they manage their wealth, and entrepreneurs are becoming a lot more savvy and interested in how I might manage that life after, and also my wealth and what, you know, how I deal with my children. And it's quite a personal journey as well. So it's not just looking at the business challenges, it's looking at how you interact, the work-life balance, kids, wealth, all that kind of stuff is quite common as well.
I'll just add to that that it's quite nice to see some members meeting each other, perhaps exiting their business and then going on to co-found businesses people they've met in the club, or we have an investment club as well. So a lot of people are moving more to a sort of portfolio. They don't want to necessarily start something again, but they'll invest and end up being a non-exec in a number of earlier stage businesses. So there's a lot of members meet and kind of work together in that capacity as well.
I'm really curious, you said that one of the things that you, besides maybe, you know, the more traditional issues that you want to tackle to grow and scale as a company, the issue of culture now at businesses is maybe more prevalent than it was before, maybe when you were founded. Have you noticed that as a trend? Is it something that you've had to incorporate more as your strategy to help businesses grow, as a real keen eye on the culture within the company?
I think scale-ups probably have adopted that and played on that far more than corporates ever did. So and that may be because the presence of the founder and their values and their passion and stuff come through in a earlier stage business than maybe it can do in a very large corporate that's been around for a long time. We are regularly amazed just by how founder-led businesses or CEO-led scale-ups are able to get across their purpose and their values and vision far more effectively than lots of the large businesses we see. So I think they probably lead the way in that respect.
Yeah, and I would just say that purpose and purpose-led business is just what the nature of what scale-ups are, because they've come from a founder or founders starting with a purpose in mind. So I think we've gone from the age of sort of almost past the why age, you know, start with the why. That's a given now, especially with millennials coming through. It's kind of now the who are our clients, who are we dealing with, and actually almost brand being with clients and it's all sort of interact now. So I think it just goes without saying that has to be a big part of it.
So do you think, I think there's at least the general perception now that people are starting more and more companies, but at the same time that funding is obviously as big an issue as ever. Do you see, you know, you're saying you have a lot of millennial members. Do you see this generation come in with more of a entrepreneurial, you know, you said the why is built in already. Is that a trend you've noticed, or has that always sort of been the case?
I think, so the why coming through, I think that's always been the case, and Duncan jump in if he'd say otherwise, but so from what Duncan alluded to earlier, I think the funding thing is actually, there's so much money to go around now and not enough opportunities or the right opportunities to put it in. So people can go and get money in different options if they're looking. So I don't actually think funding, access to funding, is such a big issue as it was before. I think leadership skills is actually a big thing, and access to talent. So whether it be your own personal skills as a founder, and if you're a millennial founder, you've never even maybe worked in industry before, and you're now running a team of 100 people, that's going to have challenges. So having to skill themselves up, but also senior leadership teams and talent within your team, making sure they have the right skills. And I think that's become ever more prevalent. So we're doing a lot more events around talent and skills. So workshops around specific skill sets like marketing and sales and leadership to help support members and their teams, to help the teams then step up so the members can focus on the business as well.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is I helped co-found something called Startup Britain about 7 years ago, and we tracked the number of new startups every year, and that rose year on year from I think it was about 300,000 or 400,000 to 600,000 or so a year or two ago. And actually last year it did sort of come down a little bit. And I think we just have to separate out the difference between people who were leaving employment for whatever reasons post the 2008 crash and maybe setting up as a consultant and those that are starting a business to actually grow and scale it. And the latter is a much smaller number of people. So out of the 5.5 million businesses we have in the UK, there's probably only about, I think last time I looked, about 220,000 that have 10 staff or more. So, you know, the number kind of really sort of tapers off. And I think you get down to about 7,000 businesses that are 250 staff and above. So there are very, very few that successfully scale up from being, you know, a one-person business to even more than 10, and then beyond that, far less. So I do think the one big thing I've seen over the last 10 or 15 years is the ability of those that are looking to scale up to be able to attract talent far more easily. And I think that's two reasons. One, I think younger people are more open to joining. So if they're not starting a business, they're much more excited about joining a startup than maybe they were 10 years ago. And two, I think, you know, there is a lot of early stage finance out there, and that has enabled people to compete on salaries. You know, back when I started my business, you were inevitably sort of trying to persuade someone to come and work for you for a lot less than they could get if they were very talented, going working for the much better known business up the road. And that was a really tough gig, and you were really selling on purpose and passion and flexibility and, you know, all those things. But now early stage business can go out and raise money and offer the same kind of salaries they'll get in the blue chip companies, but just have a much more fun environment, much more engaging and so forth. So I think early stage business have an advantage over big corporates. Mm.
And you were saying that one of the most essential things you see as leading to a successful scale up is these leadership skills. In your experience, what have you seen as maybe the most valuable or some of the most valuable skills some of these entrepreneurs can implement within their teams to try to do so? I know I'm getting some grimaces. Maybe it's a tough question.
It's a great question. It's just a really hard one to answer.
I think one of the areas that I identified, not me personally, but that came up quite a lot, was taking a vision and a goal and a strategy, and then how do you actually get that into execution and delivery and getting the rhythm into your business? So people going, yeah, I want to get there in 3 years, but how do I manage that as a manager of the business as well as being a leader to actually execute on a daily, yearly, monthly basis? So there are a lot more tools, and a lot of members are talking about these types of things now. So whether it be OKRs from Google, there's a book called Gino Whitman called Traction, and he has the Entrepreneur Operating System. There's something called Strategy on a Page. So whatever the tool set that you need and works for you, a lot more members are using that. So it's actually taking being a good executor and doing what you do well, then actually being a manager and putting systems and processes in place, which is where quite a lot of the conversations in the club take place, how to step back from director-led sales, for instance. And then finally, it's a leadership skill. So as you grow a business, you need to become a better communicator of your vision, of your values, of your culture, to keep that as you scale. So it's then some members who may be very technical having to learn to be a real orator. So it's a real mix depending on your skill set. So I would say that from my side is one of the key areas.
I think the two that I've noticed in people that do it very, very well is they start with the mindset of aiming, if they know they're going to scale a business, always looking to make their role redundant. So at the beginning, they'll probably lead on sales very commonly. And as they grow, they'll try and find somebody to come into that role and lead the sales and build the sales team. And then they'll maybe deal with strategic partners if they're selling into bigger clients. But the idea is they're always trying to kind of create space so that they can look at the strategy, look at the new opportunities, and increasingly looking to see where the big threats might come down. Is there someone going to come in like a Google or an Amazon into your space and just knock your business off overnight? So just constantly thinking, how do we adapt? And then the other one is about communication. And the way I sort of talk about it is those that have the ability to keep things really simple. So we talk about ending ambiguity, because I think a lot of people are very capable, but when they communicate, they don't do enough of it. Or entrepreneurs tend to have a kind of mind that leaps around, and they just think everything in their head is super clear to everyone else. And actually, it can be quite worrying if we're going that direction one day and tomorrow we're going over there and then we're back over this way. So it's trying to get that balance. You obviously want to stay agile and flexible and adapt with the market and what comes your way. But the people that do it really well are conscious of how they're communicating. They do it a lot, and they can kind of keep things simple. So making themselves redundant and ending ambiguity. Mm.
Sort of a hard pivot here, because it's what I'm about to ask is maybe potentially everyone's least favorite topic these days. So there's obviously a lot of unknown territory and times coming up for especially scale-ups, perhaps, as Brexit gets finalized and the business market in the UK becomes, again, a bit more uncertain than it's been in the recent past. What is the advice you are giving your members? And obviously, it will have to be tailored to each specific company, but just a bit generally, what do you see as a successful strategy for navigating these uncertain times?
So I think there's two things. Firstly, entrepreneurs by their nature will want to find solutions. So if they're given the rules of the game, even if they're not sort of, you know, actually hard rules, but some rules, they'll work with those rules. At the moment, I think the challenge is no one knows what the rules are. So hopefully, I think within hours or in the next couple of days, you might actually have some clarity on what that looks like, which I think then for a lot of entrepreneurs, they know what they can work with, whether it be tariffs or talent or visas, etc. I think a lot of members are already thinking of solutions. So I know entrepreneurs who've gone and set up, whether it's actual bricks and mortar or virtual offices on the mainland. People also already looking at diversifying their client base, looking at wider markets. I know people who've gone, you know, access to talent could be that be a problem. Well, actually, let's go and, if it's tech, for instance, let's go and actually open an office in wherever it might be in Eastern Europe where they have got some tech or people have moved back. Well, actually, let's go and open office. If someone, one of our team has moved back, let's open office over there. So people are already finding solutions. And secondly, I think the don't back off. I think it's almost like we have to double down on investment because I think if people don't then invest and just wait and see, the world will come past. And I think in previous recessions, as Duncan mentioned, people just got on and did it. And the people who took the most of the opportunity was invested, whether themselves or money or time, in actually making things happen. So I think a lot of members are going to be doing that as well.
Yeah, I just add on a personal note, my new business is a software as a service business, and we have an almost entirely remote team, and we built it that way from the start. So those that are UK-based get together once a week. We have our tech team in Poland, but some of them have been historically based in Cape Town, Portugal, Leeds, all over the place. So, and we have an extended kind of freelance network, and they're based all over Europe and further afield. So I think, as EJ said, people flex, and actually it reminds me of, you know, post last significant recession, you know, the crash, that there were two mindsets. There were those that had been running a business for a long time saying, oh, well, we're not really going to change, and, you know, I thought that was peculiar. And then we'd find commonly in the club, people just saw it as an advantage. So people would look at the macro picture, and this is where, you know, big numbers and averages are fairly meaningless. So the economy was shrinking, but it did mean that people are looking for value. So the end consumer or corporates, if they were procuring B2B, they were looking for value. And our businesses end up taking advantage of that. So some may have failed along the way, and they probably increased their growth. So I think the entrepreneurial mindset and sort of spirit that EJ's alluding to that we see in our members is very much one of, it's a real pain at the time, but as you say, once you've got the lay of the land, it actually can provide a competitive edge. So I think people, they'll be fine.
Mm. And I guess looking forward, what do you see the Supper Club itself? What do you see the future of the Supper Club being, or what would you like it to be?
Well, we're delivering, we've got members who are based all over the UK and actually further afield, and at their businesses, they tend to do a lot of business back in the UK. Traditionally, we've delivered most of our events in London. However, we're doing more and more events around the country. So we've been to Liverpool, Bristol, Manchester, off to Birmingham again next year. And then we're launching local forums. So that's one area that we're looking to expand, and then hopefully going international with some of our offerings as well. So that's one part of it. The other side of it is we already do live workshops, as I mentioned. One of the areas that we're looking at is how to we create more content online so people can access it remotely, but also deliver more e-learning. We talked about skills, and we've got you know, we've seen how the best scale, and we've worked with thousands of entrepreneurs now. So knowing the skill sets that your teams need to allow you to step up, and we're sort of starting to design short courses that they can then work through and help them skill up remotely as well. So hopefully we're going to create more value over the next couple of years through that as well.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with me. And on a personal note, I will say, as a 23-year-old myself, it is very encouraging to hear the word millennial in a business and then not a disparaging comment. So that's really great. And the community you're fostering is amazing. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Want to know which companies are about to list on the London Stock Exchange? To see an up-to-date list of all the new and upcoming London IPOs, please visit voxmarkets.co.uk/IPO-watch.